The Guardian.
Hi, everybody. It's Max here. Just to let you know that after we finished recording, the Premier League changed the Villa-Spurs game to Spurs-Fulham. So while we're discussing Villa-Spurs, if you could just Control-C Villa and Control-V Fulham, that would be really useful for us. Also, the news north of the border in Scotland with Celtic and the lower leagues in Scotland, that also happened after we finished recording. But it doesn't matter because there is an anecdote of a generation from Ben Fisher on today's podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Has the FA Cup lost its magic? Has asking whether the FA Cup has lost its magic lost its magic? Has asking whether the FA Cup has lost its magic gone too commercial? Lots of fun in the third round this weekend. Crawley seeing off a sorry Leeds. Men high on cherry pickers watching sixth tier Adele singing Chorley make it through to the fourth round. Marine hitting the bar at 0-0 versus Spurs. Louis Barry scaring Liverpool. A match of the day that went on for hours and discovering that Cameron Jerome plays for MK Dons. We'll look back at all of it, well, most of it, and look ahead to the midweek Premier League games. That, your questions, and an intriguing business suggestion for Barry, all on today's Guardian Football Weekly. A request from Bryce. Hi, Max. Currently in COVID isolation. Looking forward to something to listen to. Please make this one funny. I'm desperate. Bryce, wish you well. Barry Glendenning, have you got some zingers prepared for Bryce to get him through 1 hour of his isolation?
No, I haven't, but thank you for springing that on me. Poor Bryce, all alone, at home, with no one to talk to. Much like yourself, Max, and me. and you could have given me time to prepare some material, but you haven't. So I'm afraid it's going to be a grim, dull hour for Bryce.
Okay, we're absolutely going to wade through the mud of this podcast. Ben Fisher, welcome to the pod. How are you doing?
Hi, Max, UK.
Very good, thank you. Paul Doyle, hello.
Hi, Max. I think I heard that question from the listener, and I have a suggestion. He needs to get himself a computer as bad as my one, because I can only hear every second word that you're saying. So can I amuse myself by filling in the words that you might be saying?
Let's start then with Crawley 3, Leeds 0. Crawley currently sixth in League 2, 64 places below Leeds, and they thoroughly deserved it. Ben, did you see this coming?
Yes and no. I mean, Crawley have been on a great run. Leeds don't have the best record in the Cup. I remember a couple of years ago when Newport dumped them out, and this time they were shoved aside once more. I mean, Crawley were really on the front foot and from the word go, they got at Leeds, and you know they blew them away really, which is, seems mad to say for a gap so big. I think 62 places between them, but a really good Crawley performance and a really poor Leeds one.
Barry, Nick Sarula's goal was excellent, and he got really emotional afterwards. It was, you can get a bit sort of, I don't know. There seems to be either you don't think it's magic, or you just get caught in this narrative of trying to find things that are magic. It was a magic moment.
Yeah, I would question the wisdom of playing any of these third-round games at all, and I think there might be a very heavy price to pay COVID-wise a couple of weeks down the line, and perhaps the weekend that's just passed may, and I'm only speculating here, I'm not sure if I've mentioned it, but I'm not an epidemiologist, I think it may do for the rest of the season, and we may look back on this third round and think it was absolute insanity to play it in the first place, much like when the two international breaks near the start of the season, everyone was going, what the hell are they doing? This is crazy. But having said all that, that got my moaning and my gristling out of the way, the third round did throw up some wonderful moments, and Nick Cerula's goal was one of them, one of the goals of the round. And his reaction afterwards was very heartwarming. I must confess I had never heard of the guy before starting to watch that game yesterday. I was very impressed with him, and it turns out he was released by Spurs after being involved in a car accident a couple of years ago, lost a year of his career, went to Brentford and was released by them, and has now found a place at Crawley and sort of got to remind everyone that he still exists.
On the logic of playing this round at all, Paul, I don't know, where do you stand with that, or you know, carrying on playing football at all?
Generally speaking, I'm in favour of it, so long as safety can be protected as much as possible. And I do believe that they've taken lots of precautions, because I think it's important that we continue having at least one shared experience that is joyful. Otherwise, the only thing that links us is the misery of the lockdown and deaths. So to have something else that we can look forward to and help sustain us through this harrowing time is good. But obviously, we can't be reckless about it. From what I've seen from covering the Premier League, and I go to matches every week, it seems pretty safe. Obviously, there is human frailty, and some people do breach the bubbles and lapse. But that's going to happen no matter how tight a lockdown you put in, because humans are humans.
Ben, and from someone who covers the EFL a lot, would you say the same? I wonder if Barry's fear is, you know, it's EFL players who aren't tested as rigorously playing against Premier League players and the impact that will have on the Premier League season.
Yeah, I would say generally Premier League and Football League wide, the protocols are, you know, quite stringent from clubs when you get to games, and, you know, the different zones, red and amber. For example, you know, the red zone is very much sort of player and manager, and that's just about it, really, you know, in terms of staff. I do feel a little bit uneasy about when we're seeing the kids of Derby and the kids, obviously, of Aston Villa playing. It just makes you kind of wonder, you know, what is going on here. Obviously, it sort of exacerbates the grim situation we're in, just shows that. But generally, in terms of how football is going about its business, I can't really fault it, to be fair. I don't have any concerns in that sense. And also, we should say the FA Cup, every team was tested, so I don't think there's any issue there in terms of the transmission.
Martin says, can we have a go at Bielsa yet, or is he still under embargo for any criticism? Barry?
Well, I suppose he deserves criticism for that performance yesterday. He picked a team that should have been capable of beating Crawley Town. I mean, that's a given, that any Leeds side should be able to beat Crawley Town. But they didn't play well. He made some bizarre substitutions at half-time. Took off Rodrigo, Pastu, Struik and Liam Cooper. Brought on Oliver Casey, Jack Jenkins, Jack Harrison. Casey and Jenkins are both fairly inexperienced. And I think Leeds really missed Liam Cooper in that second half. Their back three was pretty badly exposed, and Crawley duly made hay. But any manager, any Premier League manager whose side gets knocked out in the third round does deserve a certain amount of criticism. I did notice Jose Mourinho, who I presume we'll get to, said before the game, if we lose a Premier League game, it's my fault. If these guys lose this game, it's their fault. And I thought that was quite funny on a number of levels, not least because he's not usually so prepared to accept blame for Premier League defeats. Leeds should have been good enough to beat that team, and they've just played diabolically badly.
Mr. Lancaster says, did Bielsa sit through five series of TOWIE to scout Mark Wright? What did you make, Ben, of the only way as Essex is Mark Wright getting 2 minutes on the pitch? And I think one touch.
Yeah, a bit of scepticism over it, isn't there? Because obviously, is it a PR stunt? Is it not? People you speak to, Crawley adamant it's not. By all accounts, quite a good player back in the day. Obviously, a lot's happened since that day. His brother, obviously, Josh Wright, has just rejoined Crawley as well from Leyton Orient, after leaving Leyton Orient. To be fair, I don't think a man that is sort of straight talking and is up front as John Jens would have any kind of. Would accept any kind of, I don't know, just shoo-in because, you know, because he has to play or because there's some kind of awful reason behind it. So he clearly went along with it. Whether there's anything more to it, we don't know, but I don't think so.
I did play with him once in a England v Wales charity football match, of which I think Harry Redknapp was our manager, and the star turn was Idris Elba, who came on at right back, who wasn't the best. I do remember Mark Wright being really quite good at football. Whether he's good enough for League Two is perhaps another question. But look, well done to Crawley. Crawley fans will be incensed, I guess. Well, I don't know if they will. I saw a lot of people saying, you know, that shouldn't be the show. They played incredibly well. There were great performances all over the pitch, and they thoroughly deserved their win. Crawley beat Derby 2-0. Chorley from the National League North. That's the sixth tier, playing Derby's Kids. A COVID outbreak meant they were without their entire first team squad. Boss Wayne Rooney, most of their under 23 side. You know, Chorley have a lift engineer and a PE teacher. People looking out of windows from houses above at the pitch. A bloke on a cherry picker as well. It had all the ingredients, Barry, but was it an upset?
No, not at all. Chorley should have won, and they did win comfortably. Again, without wanting to put a downer on everything, this game was a bit of a farce, as was the Liverpool-Villa game. Derby County's players didn't have a senior appearance between them. I suppose their star player is a young lad called Bobby Duncan, who used to be on Liverpool's books, is related to Steven Gerrard, I think. It was intriguing from as a spectacle, insofar as you have these grown men who are part-time players in the sixth tier taking on full-time footballers who are still boys. So you're kind of wondering, well, who'll tire first? Is there any chance that the young lads will be able to get the better of these men? But ultimately, no, they created very little, and Chorley, the 2-0 scoreline didn't do Chorley's dominance justice at all. They could have won by 6 or 7.
Ben, beyond this, I mean, you obviously followed the championship. Wayne Rooney's actually done quite a good job, isn't he, at Derby?
Yeah, he is doing well. He has steadied the ship, and I think there's a very good chance he will become the full-time permanent manager. Derby's protracted takeover is supposed to be completed. Been saying that for a while now, but that there is the belief that it will get done at Derby. And yeah, and Rooney is doing a good job. But I have to agree with Barry in the sense that I thought it was a shame because obviously it's great for Chorley to be in the hat, but I felt the achievement was diminished quite substantially by the Derby team out. But I did like the fact that I think the Chorley groundsman slept at the ground and was sort of pouring boiled water onto the pitch in the early hours to make sure the game went ahead. So for that reason alone, I'm all for it.
That was the Ben Kay, the groundsman, presumably not the rugby player, who slept on the pitch. Yeah, the manager, Jamie Vermoglio, saying, "I FaceTimed him at 6 a.m. Someone else answered the phone and showed him fast asleep in the middle of the pitch. He'd slept here to make sure we got it on." I couldn't work out if he sort of emitted some heat himself. He's sort of such a sort of, like, what does sleeping on the pitch do to you know, what a powerful ground.
No, I think the reason he slept on the pitch was they had a big tent over it and he just camped out under the tent to make sure that all the fans and hair dryers and candles they had to make sure the pitch thawed out were functioning throughout the night.
I think it's catching on as well. I must admit, I can't say I've come across it loads of times, but in Newport, the groundsman did the same and he slept at the stadium, albeit in the comfort of a stadium office on a sofa, but there must be something to it. So maybe we'll see more in the next round. Who knows?
Look, that money saved Chorley, basically. They could make as much as $500,000from this run, which has seen them knock 4 EFL sides out of the cup.
I was very impressed with their manager, Jamie Vermoglio. He speaks very, very well. He's a young guy. I reckon he's only in his 30s, but he's a head teacher of a primary school. That's his proper job. And he was saying that he hadn't really got much time or any time during the week to focus on this game because he obviously had to concentrate on trying to get his kids sorted with their homeschooling and all that. So he said he didn't really have much time to think about the game until Friday night.
Aston Villa 1, Liverpool 4 then. Tim says, does the Aston Villa under-12's pitiful showing against the reigning world champions Liverpool prove Jordan Jarrett Bryan right once and for all about Dean Smith? Villa's entire first team squad, including Dean Smith and the senior team staff forced into isolation by a COVID outbreak. They had to hastily assemble a side made up of youth team players. Mark Delaney, the under-23 managers, picked 4 under-18s. Several of the under-23s were among those isolating. 5 of Villa's starting 11 weren't even born when James Milner made his debut in the FA Cup in 2003 for Leeds against Scunthorpe. You were there, Paul, and they had their moment, didn't they? That Louis Barry goal was just a brilliant, brilliant moment.
It was a brilliant moment. It was a really nice goal. It wasn't a fluke. It was a run and pass by Callum Rowe, the fullback, and a really composed finish from a 17-year-old who has been much talked about among Villa fans as a hot prospect. And the hot prospect kept his cool in the biggest moment of his career to date and scored a lovely goal. And for an hour, Villa's kids were holding the reigning Premier League and world champions. And so that was very entertaining. That is the appeal of the FA Cup. Obviously, this was particularly weird circumstances, but the appeal of the FA Cup is that the very greatest and brightest luminaries of the game have to go and prove how good they are against people from much lower levels. And Liverpool eventually did that, but it was a lot of fun watching them. It was a nice novelty, at least.
Yeah, I thought his interview afterwards, Louis Barry, was great. And he's saying, look, my family were probably screaming at the TV when I scored. I actually thought we might even have a chance here. And he said, then he was compared, I think, by Klopp to Jamie Vardy. And he said, oh, I'm the next Louis Barry, he said. And I thought, well, announcing yourself in the third person is a risk. But then I thought, if I was 17 and I'd just scored against one of the best teams in the world, I'd have probably just burst into tears if someone had put a microphone in my face or been incredibly cocky that I would have been just sort of torn to shreds later. Barry.
It was really funny when Villa equalised because I didn't think they had hope of getting a goal.
No, and Paul, the celebration was great as well.
Yeah, the celebration was great because it was just honest to goodness, natural, sincere enthusiasm and delight. And obviously, the cynical thing to say or the world-weary thing to say will be, well, give him a few years and he'll be more interested in the trappings of success rather than the game itself. But that doesn't always happen. There's lots of examples, and the prime example of that happening is Jack Grealish, because Jack Grealish still plays, despite being almost at the top, still plays with that sort of boyish enthusiasm and plays like he's just playing with a bunch of mates down the playground. It's one of the things that makes him so entertaining to watch.
Actually, you spend quite a lot of time watching Villa, I know, Paul. Like, how surprised and impressed have you been with their senior team, their first team this season?
I'm surprised in the sense that I didn't expect them to be transformed from last season to the extent that they are. But I knew that was their ambition, and I know that Dean Smith is a very good manager. And despite what other people say, you just have to look at his record. He's been proving it since he took over Walsall when they were, I think, 8 points adrift of safety. And he's never been relegated. He steered down to safety. He's been relegated. Brentford are excellent at picking players, but also picking coaches. And he did a great job for them. And what was most impressive almost about them last season was the way a manager who has always been an attacking, sort of adventurous manager realised that couldn't really sustain that in the Premier League in the first season after promotion amid a huge injury crisis. And so he changed into the tightest defence in the Premier League mid-season. And now this season, he's kept the defensive solidity and gone back to playing with the audacity and sort of free-flowing attacking, which makes them really great to watch. And they play with an ambition befitting a big team. It's the sort of thing, that Newcastle fans have been crying out for example, for years. A team that just plays like a big team with ambition. They may not necessarily win a trophy, but at least they play like they believe they potentially could.
Paul, do you think the game on Wednesday, it's in doubt, the game against Spurs in the Premier League, do you think that should happen? A cynic would suggest they put out their kids because it was the FA Cup and they wouldn't have done it in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that the fact that they've shown that they can play a team with kids to does set a precedent. I think it depends on how many players Villa can field to sort of protect sporting integrity. If they have to field their youngsters again against the Tottenham team, I would say no. It makes a sort of mockery of the Premier League. It's a flawed fixture in that sense. But we have to make compromises playing in the pandemic, and we may have to accept that that's just the look of it. But safety protocols certainly have to be maintained, so they shouldn't play it and put anyone at risk.
If you play the FA Cup game with your kids, then if you then don't play the Premier League game, then the integrity of the FA Cup is gone, isn't it?
Well, the FA Cup, there's an understanding that there are imbalanced fixtures, part of the charm of the Cup, given obviously this was a particularly imbalanced fixture.
Yeah, I mean, FA Cup third round games have to be finished before the fourth round can be played. So there is more urgency about getting FA Cup games played than Premier League games, which can be postponed and replayed at a later date. Now, obviously, Tottenham will complain with some justification that they've had two games postponed already through no fault of their own, and to have a third postponed through no fault of their own would be unfair because they're also in the Europa League, and so they're going to have fixture problems down the line. But, you know, like I say, there is more flexibility with regard to the Premier League than there is to the FA Cup.
That's a good point. And just on the point of flexibility, because one of the reasons Mourinho gave for not being able to reschedule this thing is because all the domestic fixtures have to be finished because of the Euros. So if I think the Euros should be sacrificed to give flexibility to all leagues across Europe. Having a major international tournament in a few months and insisting it must go ahead, despite what's happening now, that seems like senseless pigheadedness.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll discuss Spurs as we go to the Marine Travel Arena. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Marine 0, Spurs 5. Lots of Prosecco, patio heaters, speakers playing Three Lions in the back garden. Stephen says the effervescence of touchline car boot stereos alone is worth its own episode. Latent Heat says, I can't tell you how mind-boggling this image is for fans watching from the United States. It's like the Seattle Seahawks playing the OMAC high school football team on their field. Yeah, which is sort of one of the beauties of it, isn't it? Marine from the Northern Premier League, Division 1 North West, only the second team ever from the eighth tier to get to the third round, have won seven ties to get there, one more than Spurs would play if they won the thing. They hadn't played since Boxing Day. Now they're being furloughed because football at their level has been stopped. They lost an estimated 300,000 because of lockdown. FA prize money, TV money. They sold more than 30,000 virtual tickets, a lot of them bought by Spurs fans, to make up the shortfall. And Ben, they had their moment, didn't they? They had their chance.
Yeah, they did. And I have to say, I absolutely loved every minute of that first 22 minutes or whatever it was before Tottenham took the lead. Obviously, hitting the bar, Joe Hart thinking, you know, it was sailing over. Just it was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I love the fans stood there in the tree trying to sort of keep his balance to get a good glimpse of Gareth Bale, whoever it might have been. I think it was just a brilliant occasion. In fact, it was funny because I think the Niall Cummins, the sort of journeyman type striker, he said, you know, he was disappointed they didn't execute the game plan. And I thought, you've got absolutely nothing to be disappointed about. It was brilliant. I thought they, you know, the way they sort of kept Spurs at bay for that first quarter or so was great. Some of the scenes and the people peering over from the gardens from number 19 and what have you was, yeah, superb.
Yeah, Cummings, you could see it, but during the second half, he was just trying to leave one on any Spurs player that went past him. It was Neil Kenge, the trainee plumber, that hit the bar from 35 yards. Barry, what did you make of it all?
Yeah, I really thought, more so than any other game, this espoused the fabled magic of the Cup. There's been a lot of tut-tutting at the people of Crosby for gathering outside the stadium to wait for the team coaches to pull up. I suppose that could lead to a COVID spike in the area in days and weeks to come. But inside the ground, I think Tottenham deserve a tremendous amount of credit for the manner in which they comported themselves, I suppose. You know, they knew they were going to win. They could have picked a much weaker team, but didn't. And they showed a lot of respect for the competition. Jose seemed to, rather than consider the occasion beneath him, which you could perhaps have thought he might, and he could possibly be forgiven for thinking it was beneath him. He seemed to, you know, quite enjoy the whole experience, and it was my favourite tie of the round, definitely. And Marine didn't get humiliated, so that was good. That was always a live possibility, but they went off the field with their heads held high, or I hope they did anyway.
Dele Alli pulled the strings. I mean, I know it's only Marine, but he's such a lovely footballer, and I just want Jose to put him on the pitch more often. A hat-trick for Vinicius. I absolutely loved how hard he belted the first one in from, like, it was already half over the line, wasn't it? And he absolutely hammered the thing. And Alfie Devine, his first Spurs goal, Spurs' youngest ever player. He was born on the 1st of August 2004, when Busted were at number one with Thunderbirds Are Go. Sam says, is it just me, or did a very young Matthew Pinsent just score for Spurs? He did look a bit, there's a touch of the Pinsents. And a bit like...
Alfie Devine is the guy. This is the second time he's made headlines this season, because he was the guy who, in a under-23 game between Tottenham and Chelsea, scythed down Danny Drinkwater, who then kicked him and started a 20-man brawl, and the two of them got sent off. So, he's making headlines for all the right reasons this season.
Yes, Dan says... I've just realised I'm 2 years older than someone who scored for Spurs. Does this mean I'm not going to make it, even if I pull myself together and start being good at football? There is that moment, isn't there? For sort of not cloggers like us, and I don't want to besmirch the level that any of you played football, but when the final nail in the coffin, when somebody younger than you scores a goal. Michael Owen came on against Wimbledon for Liverpool and put one away, and that was the moment for me when I thought, this really... It was never going to happen, but it really isn't going to happen now. I don't know if any of you have a similar example.
Well, Ryan Giggs was for me. He's not younger than me, but he's only a couple of months older than me. So when he was sort of sweeping all before him as a swashbuckling young Manchester United winger, I sort of realized, and I was, just bumming around drinking pints and smoking fags, not actually playing football. I think that was when it realized that, yeah, I'm probably not going to be a professional now, at least not in the Premier League.
So much has changed, eh?
When I discovered that Mark Overmars is, I think, less than a week older than me, that really hurt. That was awful. I think he just won the Champions League with Ajax.
Paul, have you got any... Was there a moment?
There's no one moment. I think I can honestly say that one of my best traits... is I've always been very aware of my inadequacies.
You were quite good, though, weren't you, Paul? You played for... Did you play League of Ireland with UCD?
No, a League of Ireland reserve division.
Okay.
That sounds pretty good to me. That sounds better. You know, that's probably better than I was / am, and I talk about it a lot. Ben, you're going to upset us now, aren't you, by saying the player that was the first player to make you upset was Alfie Devine.
No, but I would say I was at the Championship playoff final when Joe Bryan scored that sort of preposterous goal for Fulham. And Joe Bryan was the player for me, being from Bristol, who, you know, you sort of jawed against when we were sort of mid-teens, or probably a bit younger, actually. Probably done him a disservice there, because he was on the books at Bristol City from a very young age. So when he did that and I was sat there writing about it, I thought, yeah... We've gone in different directions here. And I should just say as well, on Alfie Devine, probably mixed feelings as well at Wigan on that one, because he was one of the players Tottenham, you know, essentially signed on the cheap, I think for around 300,000 to 400,000, signed him as a 15-year-old, and he was one of the many talented youngsters that left in the summer months for fees, you know, much lower than what they should have been, really, but because of the position Wigan are in, obviously been in administration since then. So yeah, precarious times at Wigan, and just to sort of rub salt into the wound, really, because he was one of the next big things, as was Joseph Gellert, who joined Leeds, and Jensen Weir, who went on to join Brighton.
Dave says, what's the requisite number of divisions between two teams for the commentary team to be horrifically patronising? I'd suggest four leagues apart before they say things like, well, that is a lovely moment. He'll remember this for the rest of his life after someone wins a throw-in. I actually thought it was Dion Dublin on commentary, who I'm very biased towards, obviously. But I really enjoyed his enthusiasm, and it was kind of infectious. I didn't find it patronising, but I saw a few people when I tweeted out that I was enjoying Dion Dublin, that other people thought, yeah, they're real footballers. You know, they haven't won a competition to be there. I don't know if anyone else sensed.
I did make a note here that, I don't know if it was Dublin, but I've written down here, because I think somebody said, did you see his little face when Elfie Devine scored? And I thought that was a touch patronising, but as somebody said, I don't want to take credit for it. I think it might have been Richard Osman, but he said, you know, was Dion itching to flog or renovate one of those terraced houses? That made me smile.
Mojo Duffelcoat saying, I loved the hand-over-the-mouth free kick chat between Mora and White. Presumably just in case the lady at number 27 is watching with binoculars, isn't on a direct telephone line to the Marine coach. And Alvin saying, with Marine having James Joyce and David Lynch, which Spurs players would be most likely to write Ulysses or direct Twin Peaks? It's a very good question. How different would Twin Peaks be if Steven Bergwijn had been behind the camera? I'm not sure. I think Pierre-Emile Hoybier could write Ulysses and maybe change it. Anyway, Blackpool through. They beat West Brom on penalties. I don't know how much West Brom you're watching, Paul, but it's not really working out for Big Sam quite yet, is it?
No, it's certainly not. He's speaking of inadequacies. He's been talking about the team's inadequacies since he first went in, and has made it clear that he wants to make a lot of signings in January, and they have to be bargains because he's not going to be given a lot of money. Which does, I was thinking about this as well in light of Sheffield United's struggles, and every team that comes up to the Premier League has a choice to make. They either, you know, between financial prudence and we'll try and do it with the team that got us promoted, or go on this mad trolley dash to try and embed themselves in the top flight. And obviously there are some exceptions to that. But if they do go on the trolley dash and they go down, the parachute payments are supposed to cushion that fall a little bit. Well, I was thinking it might be worth sort of front-loading the payments, because it's all very well saying after promotion, okay, well, you've got £120 million to build a team, but every other team in the league gets £120 million as well, and have been doing so for the last 5 or 10 years. So I think it'd be better to front-load the parachute payments and give the promoted teams, you know, £300 million or whatever, so that they can have a better chance to build a team. Or the other thing you could do is you could just give them more points. So after, in your first season after promotion, you start on plus 10 points, and then the second season you get plus 5 points or something. So you can sort of build more sensibly and recognize that it's kind of a handicap system for newly promoted teams, and recognize that they're arriving in, recognizing the imbalances, the huge inequities between the leagues, and trying to balance it out in a slightly more sensible way.
Since you gave me the penalty change rule, which I've really taken on, I've really tried to convince everybody near me.
I heard you try to convince Ali McCoist, and he was having none of it.
McCoist and Jamie O'Hara.
I think
really
he was going to call
favor.
The men in white coats.
No, I've become, Paul, sort of your PR man. I'm the hype man. I'm the hype man for your penalty rule, which, just in case nobody can remember, is the penalty area is only there for the goalkeeper to know where to pick up the ball, and fouls in the box are just free kicks. But if you deny a goal-scoring opportunity anywhere on the pitch, it's a penalty. I'm more and more in favour of that, Paul. So I was thinking hard about this front-loading parachute payments, because I see you as a sort of Jedi authority figure for the rule changes of football, and so I don't want to dismiss it, you see.
Good. Well, you can take that one and run with it, you know. I'm all for it.
I suspect the Premier League wouldn't vote in favour of front-loading parachute payments, and I'm pretty certain they...
Well, how about the points handicap system, then?
Yeah, well, I don't think they'd go for that one at all. Definitely not. Like, absolutely no way. No chance.
I mean, seriously, we need to get rid of parachute payments, don't we, Ben? Because they ruin the league below.
Yeah, the gap is just so big. And I think we're seeing that both ways, because even the teams coming up are not armed with, you know, West Brom, a case in point, really, you know, sort of typical yo-yo club. And still the gap for them in the Gulf is still so big. Look where they are, and it's not really served them too well. So, but then if you're coming up from League One, like this year, Wickham, Rotherham, Coventry, you know, it's so hard to compete against a Bournemouth, for example, who, you know, have basically kept the same team in Norwich. And Watford are obviously up there as well. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of a non-starter, sadly.
But to survive, I mean, Sheffield United did everything right for 3 or 4 years. They're absolutely brilliant. Then they got their recruitment wrong this season, and they're going to go down in flames and be absolutely humiliated. So you have to, under the current system, you have to get everything absolutely right for years and years and years. And the second you make, you have one bad transfer window or whatever, you're humiliated. Whereas if you've already been an established Premier League club, like your West Hams and teams like that, you can get things wrong lots and lots of times, many seasons in a row, before you eventually drop out, because you're so mollycoddled in the top flight with the financial security and so on.
Well, I would, Paul, hire you as the head of the Premier League in a heartbeat. I don't know if I have that much power. Ben, can we talk briefly about Blackpool? Because, you know, after all, they're the success story of this result. Did this come as a surprise? I was surprised that Gary Medine was only 30. I thought he was at least 52.
Yeah, he has been around the block. Blackpool under Neil Critchley, obviously a great moment for them. Good odds, I imagine, on them landing Liverpool in the next round. Obviously spent 7 years there in the academy. And fair play to Blackpool, because it's been a bit of a rocky road, obviously, since they got relegated down the divisions, obviously, quite a few years ago now. But they've tried to rebuild under Simon Sadler, sort of a bit of a new era there. Critchley's at the top of that as a head coach. Aggressive recruitment drive, brought in numerous players in the summer now, certainly up front. And then they had, I think, Luke Garbutt, who suffered the indignation of being the player Ancelotti couldn't pick out at Everton in that wonderful moment we had. Blackpool going reasonably well in League One, and they'd probably like to think they've got a playoff push in them, as long as the Cup doesn't take over.
Arsenal 2, Newcastle 0. Emile Smith-Rowe scoring the first for Arsenal in extra time after he got that red card that was rescinded. I thought it was right to rescind it. Barry, you disagree?
Yeah, it's not something I feel particularly strongly about, but I thought it satisfied the criteria for a red card. He went in with his studs up, caught Longstaff on the shin. He endangered his safety, in my opinion. Other opinions are clearly available, many of them from Arsenal fans. And then when Chris Kavanagh took the advice of his VAR, Andre Mariner, and went and had a look at it on the screen, he decided to downgrade it to yellow. And I'm not sure there was any evidence that he'd made a clear and obvious error in showing the red in the first place. So I think the red card was probably deserved and shouldn't have been rescinded. But again, before Arsenal fans get cross with me, you know, I'm not angry about it. I just, that's my view. Okay. I don't really care whether he got sent off or not. And it was an interesting moment in an otherwise pretty bad game. It wasn't high on quality. Mikel Arteta picked a lot of the experienced senior players that let him down in recent weeks, gave them a chance to redeem themselves, and quite a few of them let him down again, mainly Willian, who is turning into an absolute disaster of a signing.
Well, I thought it wasn't a red card, and I thought there was no endangering because he was falling backwards. Again, other opinions are available. You can choose Barry's or mine. It's up to you. Choose your own adventure. Andy Carroll had such a great chance to win it, and he actually played well, didn't he? And Elliot Anderson looked good when he came on for Newcastle. Newport, Brighton threw on penalties. You were there, Ben. Did you have a nice time?
Yeah, well, it was a classic game. Another bit of magic for Newport. Obviously, second time they've lost in a penalty shootout to a Premier League team this season, having lost to Newcastle in September. Tell of two goalkeepers in a way. Tom King, the Newport backup, just made some three or four sort of outrageous saves, really. And then Jason Steele, who had a, to put it kindly, a bit of a stinker, really, ended up making four brilliant saves in the penalty shootout to win it and send Brighton through. And how they needed it, because, you know, I think it's one win in the last sort of 13 or so in all comps for Brighton. So, yeah, much needed for Graham Potter. And I've got my own slice of sort of a dull 6 out of 10 anecdote, which might please,
please.
Bryce, who I think wanted humour. As I left the ground at about 11:30 last night, I parked in the primary school where the Newport players and staff park, and that's where, you know, you can park on the match day at the moment. And I was very worried that they might have locked it up, so I hot-footed it around the perimeter of Rodney Parade and absolutely sprinted to get there, sort of all the grace of, I don't know, like Dan Byrne or somebody, and eventually got there and it was open. So I was very happy and, you know, I could get home safely. And here I am now to tell the tale. So, not riveting. I told you it was 6 out of 10. I know it's not riveting, but...
six is pushing it. That is one of the least interesting...
I think that's very generous.
It's one of the least interesting anecdotes in pod history. And there have been some really bad ones. I mean, I
worked up a sweat, Max. It was touch and go. I was thinking, you know, this could be it. How will I get home? All these thoughts were, you know, rushing through my head. So
I parked my car in a car park. I went to my car at the end when I needed to leave the car park, and I left the car park.
They said it was going to be shut at 10:30, though, you know, and there I was an hour later. So
can I ask you, Ben, about Jason Steele, who strikes me as a guy, he seems to have all the attributes of a good goalkeeper apart from the mentality. And I think he was permanently damaged by playing a starring and quite unflattering role in I think was the first season of Sunderland Till I Die, when he was brought in by Sunderland, going to be their first choice keeper, and just made several mistakes and then got dropped. And he said himself he was struggling mentally. Then Sunderland got rid, and he's now at Brighton, where I think he's third choice keeper, and he's 30 now, so it's not really going to happen for him. Last night's heroics in the penalty shootout aside,
yeah, he's never really had a home, has he, Barry? He's made a, you know, a few rickets at different clubs, and as you say, you know, he's not getting any younger. It was a weird game because he didn't play well, and, you know, seconds away really from him being, you know, in the headlines for the wrong reasons. But then, as it happens, makes great saves in the shootout, and they were really good saves. That was what Michael Finn, the Newport manager, kind of stressed. You know, I think he called them world class saves. So credit in the end to Jason Steele, because, you know, there's the mentality to sort of bounce back from knowing you've basically sent the team to into extra time, and to then, you know, dig him and the team out in advance. You know, I suppose you have to give a decent ounce of credit to him.
Wakefield Neil says, was the biggest shock of the third round finding out that Cameron Jerome and Richard Keogh play for MK Dons. I literally had no idea. I didn't have any idea either. Jerome scored. The best moment of this game, Barry, speaking of rescinded red cards, was the confusion of Richard Keogh at being sent off, and the confusion of the red card being rescinded, and just generally how confused he was by the whole occasion.
That about sums it up in a nutshell. I think, I'm not sure he wanted it to be rescinded. He looked at it a bit like, I've resigned myself to going and sitting in the stand now with my nice warm coat on. And now you're saying I have to go back onto the field. But yeah, I too got a surprise when Cameron Jerome popped up. I had no idea he was at MK Dons.
When the commentator said Jerome, I had to go and Google to check it wasn't a different Jerome. Because I made that mistake. I almost made that mistake with Hessenthaler, who was playing for Crawley, wasn't he? And I was like, Andy Hessenthaler can't still be playing. That cannot be possible.
It's not his son, is it?
I think it is, yeah. Yeah. It has to be. How many Hessenthalers are there in the UK? Bristol Rovers 2, Sheffield United 3. You were there as well, Ben. Sheffield United's first win for almost 6 months.
Yeah, and they made hard work of it as well. But as Chris Wilder said, you know, they just had to find a way to get the job done. Twice let Bristol Rovers back in. And in the end, it was fairly comfortable. Last 20 minutes or so, I suppose. Aaron Ramsdale didn't have any major saves to make or anything. But yeah, they need much needed, because you know, it's just been such a flat season, such a slog. I mean, whether it can do anything for their survival hopes remains to be seen. Seems highly unlikely, but yeah, much needed win.
Where did you park your car for this one, Ben? And did anything interesting happen when you left the ground?
I'll tell you what, Barry, it was smooth. Silky smooth.
What a relief.
Silky smooth departure.
Oh, well, that is the weight of all of our minds. Most of the big guns won. Man City beat Birmingham 3-0. United beat Watford 1-0. Manchester United. Chelsea 4, Morecambe 0. C for Chelsea says, you could buy 7,350 tonnes of Morecambe Bay shrimp for the cost of Chelsea's match day squad, £462 million. Everton squeezed past Rotherham. And Leicester won 4-0 at Stoke. Tim says, do you players still feel the magic of the cup? I was watching some games on silent yesterday and more than once thought goals had been ruled out because of the lack of celebration. Mark Albrighton looked like his dog had died. Paul, can we praise Mark Albrighton for a bit? I think he's playing really well this season in a Leicester side who are doing incredibly well as well.
Yeah, Mark Albrighton, he's one of those players that gets mentioned so often as most underrated that he can't really be classed as underrated. He's incredibly versatile, which is something that can be said about a lot of the players in Brendan Rodgers' squad. I mean, I know he didn't recruit Albrighton, but they're all very versatile. And he still has one of the best cross deliveries in the Premier League. He's an excellent player.
Another chance of an upset tonight, Stockport West Ham, a fixture famous for that Ian Dowie own goal in 1996, which maybe it's up there on the crisp brass barometer of greatest own goals ever, where Ian Dowie rises like a salmon and heads the ball back from where it came from into the bottom corner. With all the West Ham fans there on the terrace, just looking at him going, what have you done? And the look of complete... He looks more surprised than Richard Keogh. He's that surprised at heading it into his own net.
Don't you have a theory, Max, that you think he thought he was heading into the other goal, that he was trying to score?
I think if you look at his neck muscles, everything he's doing is to put it in the goal. Like, it's not a 50p head. I really think he's trying to do that. And he just momentarily forgot he was defending and not attacking.
I mean, he was a good header of a ball. And, you know, he's...
Well, and it showed. the fourth and fifth round draws are being done at 7 o'clock tonight, just for sort of fixture logistics. That's why they're doing both the draws. And that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll have a brief look ahead to the Premier League games in midweek. Welcome to part three. Kieran says, the first game of midweek is 6 o'clock at Bramall Lane, Sheffield United v Newcastle. Is Sheffield United v Newcastle United on Tuesday night the saddest game ever? That's a brutal question, isn't it? But Barry, you think Sheffield United might get another win?
I do. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they beat Newcastle, particularly now that they've got something resembling a bit of momentum behind them. And I think if they do beat Newcastle, this could be the result that tips Newcastle fans over the edge altogether, and there will be loud, loud screams for Steve Bruce's head. I mean, I didn't think Newcastle played particularly badly against Arsenal. Neither team played tremendously well, but at least they showed a bit of attacking gumption. But yeah, I earmarked this a couple of weeks ago on the pod as Sheffield United's first league win, and I'm stick with that.
The only problem, I mean, I can certainly see why Barry would earmark that as a win. The only problem is that Sheffield United have had a haplessness about them this season where matches that have been earmarked as wins and they've done everything on the pitch to suggest they should win, they've found improbable ways to lose. You know, case in point being that match against West Brom when neither side had won a match all season. And West Brom won 1-0 despite Sheffield United having more shots than any other team in the history of the Premier League or something. I think there was 39 shots in that game, which was and Sheffield United just perpetrated absurd miss after absurd miss.
I'm looking forward to, after Sheffield United get beaten by Newcastle, Chris Wilder coming out and complaining that they hadn't been given their parachute payments up front, as the new rules suggest for next year.
The points handicap is the real way forward.
What happens if, like, a team wins the league by 9 points and that has a 10-point advantage.
I mean, Sheffield United would have been in Europe last year. Conversely, even 5 points in their second season wouldn't have helped them this season. So the exact metrics may need to be adjusted, but the principle is definitely correct. I think we can all agree on that.
I'm not sure we can. In these sunny uplands of yours, do the three teams who get relegated start with minus 10 points?
No need for that.
Oh, I see.
Why?
We can't. That's something to be explored.
Hmm. Yeah, look, if any listeners have any anything they want to add to this brainstorming session, which is going very well, or if they have any car parking anecdotes, then if they could just send them to us, one we'll send to Ben and the other we'll send to Richard Masters at the Premier League, and hopefully we'll get them the right way round. Otherwise, Richard Masters will get quite a boring portfolio about car parking anecdotes. The other games... Yes, Barry?
No, I was just going to say that there's a famous story on the Guardian sports desk. I think in a time of emergency, one of the rugby writers was asked to go and do a Coventry game many years ago. His 600-word match report was a 400-word rant on the poor parking facilities at Highfield Road with a kind of a 200-word addendum tagged on at the end about, you know, what actually happened in the game. I can't remember. He had some parking nightmare anyway, but certainly knocks Ben's anecdote into a cocked hat.
Well, I have a boring car parking anecdote.
I don't doubt that for a second, Max.
When in the late 90s, we used to go to Cambridge United, and we used to always go in Fraser's car, which was a white Peugeot. And the only cassette he had was the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. And so we listened to that on a cassette every time we went to the Abbey. And it has a sort of funk version of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony called A Fifth of Beethoven, which I really would, I'd recommend you dig out. It's a real toe tapper. We'd always park in Comet, because if you parked in B&Q, you had to go and get a receipt. You see, but you didn't in Comet. But Comet car park, unlike Ben's anecdote, would always close at 5 o'clock, and we'd never get there in time. But the barrier was just a bit too low for the car, so we'd always have to all push the barrier up and squeeze the Peugeot out underneath the barrier to get out of Comet every week at the Abbey. Is that, would you say, a step up? Not necessarily a big one, a slight step up from Ben's anecdote.
I'd say that's possibly just about the six Ben thought his was.
Burnley, Manchester United, Wolves, Everton, Man City, Brighton, Villa, Spurs, if it happens. Arsenal, Chelsea's on Thursday. So, yeah, enjoy those games when they happen. Ben, did you have your hand up there or not?
I was just going to say, it'd be interesting what shape Brighton are in. Obviously, they basically went full strength at Newport. Obviously, had to pay extra time and penalties. And seems quite a big ask to go to Man City just to, you know, basically 48 hours later or a little bit longer. But and ditto with Sheffield United, who went very strong at Bristol Rovers. You know, it's a tight turnaround, and be interesting what kind of shape they are in.
I mean, where will they park the coach as well? It's something you have to think about.
Two of them.
Yeah, I know. We'll get a full report from Archie next time he's on. But Schalke won a game. First win in 31 games in the Bundesliga to avoid equaling a league record. A 19-year-old American called Matthew Hopp scored the first three goals of his senior career. So Tasmania Berlin will be happy. Jonathan says, on Tuesday, there's a Scottish Cup fixture, Keith versus Clyde. Is there another match anywhere that sounds more like a fight in a pub car park? Ben says, after the scenes at Marine, who's the most famous footballer you've seen out your kitchen window? That is something that I will definitely try on the radio as a text topic.
Craig Foster.
Craig, oh, very good. Very good, Barry. Now, finally, Christopher writes, Max, I've loved the show for a while, and I feel I have a kind of friendship with you guys now, especially Barry. Does anyone call him BGD? I know it doesn't really work, but it sounds cool. Anyway, obviously it's been a tough time for all, but good to hear BGD has still had a social life of sorts, brackets COVID compliant, socially distanced Jamaican rum, dates on park benches, a sneaky wine and cheese night when restrictions allow briefly. I actually live in South London, quite near to him, and often look out for him when I cross Clapham Common in case I catch him on one of his fabled beery walks. When lockdown is over, there are a few stag do's which I will have to go to. And I was wondering whether BGD would consider renting himself out for one. I know there's a David Brent impersonator who makes a good buck out of it. Barry, a business on the side, you could be rented out for stag do's.
I don't like going on stag do's even when I know most of the people who are on them. So I certainly don't want to go on a stag do where I won't know anyone. They're the most awful things. I'd highly recommend that Christopher just finds some excuse not to go on any of them because they're awful.
But everyone has a price, Barry. How much would you have to be paid to be rented out on a stag do?
Would I have to spend the occasion handcuffed to the groom?
Oh, 100%, yeah. Well, I think that's extra. To be handcuffed to the groom for the whole stag do, Barry, how much?
Would it be in South London?
No, it's wherever they go. I mean, I think extra for Vegas. You know, the flight handcuffed to someone would be a nightmare, wouldn't it?
I would consider it for £5,000.
There we are, Christopher.
All expenses paid.
£5,000for... Do you know what? Depending. If I hadn't stopped taking that money from the bookie, Barry, I'd put the cash up myself just for you to have to go through with it. Listen, that'll do for today's podcast. I've had a lovely time. Ben, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Barry, thank you.
You're welcome.
Paul Doyle, thank you. And I look forward to the next rule change the next time we have you on.
Thank you.
We'll be back tomorrow.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.